The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Loneliness is a rapidly growing global health issue, which might seem kind of unusual now that we have more friends and followers online than ever before. But what exactly is going on? What does loneliness do to our health? And how much work does it take to not feel lonely? Well, Dr. Mark Rowe is a family doctor with a special interest in positive health lifestyle medicine and burnout prevention. He's also the author of the number one bestseller, The Vitality Mark, and he joins me now. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Dermot. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
A pleasure to talk to you. I'm very interested in getting your insight on loneliness because as a doctor, you sit in front of a lot of different people, different ages, different ailments. And I wonder, is loneliness something that maybe bubbles to the surface during a conversation, possibly about something else entirely in your surgery?
Well, you're so right, Dermot. There are so many people right now suffering from loneliness and suffering from disconnection. I think it's been a growing trend in the Western world over the last generation. And it was aggravated by the pandemic. But even before the pandemic, there was a growing amount of loneliness. People won't generally come in and say, Mark, I'm feeling lonely. But it's, you know, it's often very pervasive and it's often in the mix with a lot of other, whether it's physical or mental health symptoms. And I think it's what it's really interesting to think about, Dermot, firstly, is, you know, language matters and what actually is loneliness, because there's a big difference between being alone versus feeling lonely. You see, feeling lonely is to feel excluded, to feel not part, to feel that even if you have friends, you don't have somebody who understands you. You don't have that deep connection that as a human being we all crave for and that we all need to really live life at our best. Whereas, as you know, Dermot, because I know you have a huge interest in mindfulness, as I do, you know, spending alone time, spending time in stillness, spending quiet time to recharge and reflect can be wonderful for our health and our well-being. And one of the greatest things we can do is give ourselves that gift of some stillness, whether it's sitting outside listening to the bird song or spending time in nature or whatever it might be. But loneliness is different. And what's really interesting is how pervasive loneliness can be when it comes to our physical health. And this is more evidence that the mind and the body are so interconnected. A lot of the research in this area has been done in the University of Chicago, and they've shown that loneliness acts as a catalyst to accelerate the development of many adverse chronic physical health conditions. So it increases high blood pressure, it increases toxic stress hormones, which increase cholesterol deposition in the plaques of our coronary arteries. So it increases heart disease by as much as 30%. It can increase stroke. It can increase memory loss. It can increase the risk of falls. It can increase long-term risk of Alzheimer's disease and dementia. And in terms of our, and of course it can weaken the immune system. It can cause, I suppose, changes in the immune system that firstly make us more prone to pick up viruses and so on, and secondly, triggering chronic cellular inflammation that can cause all these chronic health conditions. And then, Dermot, when you look at our mental health, which of course is so fragile and so important for all of us, if you're feeling lonely, it aggravates, you know, inner feelings of tension and toxic stress. It increases anxiety, it lowers mood. And it's also associated with suicidality. Now, there's a bit of a chicken and egg here in that if you are suffering from a mood disorder, if you're suffering from depression, you are suffering from toxic stress, what people tend to do often is withdraw. They tend to go back into their shell. Instead of reaching out for support, which might be the best thing in the world to do, they withdraw. And of course, that can make feelings of loneliness even worse.
I mean, can you essentially be lonely in a crowd? You know, I know I mentioned that you're a burnout expert at the beginning of our chat. And as you say, people's worlds can shrink under stress.
Yes.
And is it possible for someone, you know, who normally might function quite well within their family and friend network and work network and all that stuff, but when burnout is at play, can they start to feel lonely even though they are physically surrounded by people, but maybe emotionally disconnected because they're just so busy fighting their own internal fires.
Dermot, you're so right. You know, burnout is so prevalent nowadays, and it is a feeling of often emotional emptiness and emotional exhaustion and feeling hypercritical and feeling that the harder you work, the more and more you strive towards something, the less and less you're achieving. And of course, we all see the world through the lens of our own experience and through the lens of our own perception. And that's exactly what happens, as you said, when we are under toxic stress, when there is that imbalance between our perceived stress and our ability to recuperate and recharge from stress, our worlds shrink. And in that sort of diminished view of ourselves and of our worldview, we often withdraw from our networks. And that can really aggravate feelings of loneliness. Two really interesting things, fascinating, I think, for your listeners in terms of loneliness, is that fMRI scans of the brain have shown that the same areas that light up when you're under physical pain also light up when you're experiencing loneliness. So it is a sort of a mental, emotional, and physical pain that you're perceiving. And secondly, somebody who's experiencing loneliness, Dermot, they might know that the best thing for them to do is to get back out and reconnect, to get back out into their yoga class or get back into their men's shed or whatever it might be. But there is this thing known as the hypervigilance to social threat. In other words, you become less trusting of people when you're experiencing loneliness. You'd feel more threatened by social situations. So you may find it harder to reintegrate. And with the pandemic, a lot of people developed, let's say, less than good habits. Maybe they started drinking more alcohol than was good for their health. Maybe they started staying up later at night, scrolling on their phones. And maybe, you know, because of the enforced sort of isolation, as it were, people maybe lost some of the good habits they had. And, you know, we're all creatures of habit to an extent. And perhaps people need to look at how they could really change their habits a little bit to reconnect more. Because, you know, there was a brilliant study done in Harvard University. It's the Harvard Study of Adult Development, going on since the 1920s. And it's shown that the leading indicator of our well-being, Dermot, is the quality of our social connections. It's like a plant in a garden. You know, if a plant gets good soil, plenty of water and sunlight, it's going to grow and it's going to flourish. But if we're the same as human beings, if we don't get those vital elements, if we don't get nurturing relationships, if we don't get rich connections, we can literally wither on the vine.
Yeah. What about the age demographic of people who are possibly coming to you or maybe, you know, coming to other professionals complaining about loneliness, feeling lonely? Because in a way, I sense the marketing of dealing with loneliness needs to be updated. I mean, if you think in your mind of, okay, an ad for loneliness, you're immediately going to be seeing images of, you know, close-ups of an elderly person's hands, you know, and knocking on the door to make sure that, you know, Mrs. Gogarty down the road isn't too lonely and needs help. And that's all valid stuff. But I suspect there are a lot more younger people now experiencing loneliness. And it's not just something that we delegate to people over 65, for instance.
You're dead right. I think the traditional image of a lonely person is an older person. Mm. And there's no doubt that if you go through a major life change, if you go through a bereavement or a relationship breakup, you retire from work, you know, people can feel quite disconnected and lonely. But one of the great ironies is that younger people are really experiencing loneliness to a very, very high degree. Perhaps as many as one in three young people right now, today here in Ireland, are experiencing loneliness, despite people being never more connected on Snapchat and all the different social media platforms. Ironically, the dopamine hits that the people can get, you know, when they put up a post on their Instagram or whatever, paradoxically, you know, the perception of not getting enough dopamine likes or enough hits can create this perception of not being enough, of being inadequate in some way. And that, in a way, is felt to trigger some feelings of loneliness among younger people. And I suppose what we need is to figure out how we can create better environments for people to really connect in person. People are so stuck to their phones nowadays, it's a real, real challenge.
Mm. Well, let's talk about strategy then, Mark, with dealing with loneliness, because I think it's really important to give people takeaways, something, even if it's one thing, they can keep at the back of their mind and go, do you know what, I think a bit of that could be good for me, or maybe I could share that with my son or daughter. So take us through some of your favorite strategies to combat loneliness.
Well, what I would say, it all starts with awareness. Really knowing yourself well enough to be honest and know how you're actually feeling, and to really ask yourself, am I feeling lonely right now? And, you know, to feel temporarily lonely is a normal human reaction. We all experience it at times, but it's persistent loneliness that can really cause so many of the problems. So it all starts with awareness. Remember the basics of self-care, you know, because when people are experiencing loneliness, they often self-sabotage as opposed to taking good care of themselves. Value your sleep, make sure you exercise and move, you know, eat well, and reach out and connect with other people. Sometimes the best way to treat loneliness is to lose yourself in the service of others. So could you volunteer, for example, in your local community? Can you join a club? Could you join a network? Can you do something to help somebody else? Have you got a friend today listening to this that you could say after this program, I'm going to give him or her a ring and we're going to meet up for a coffee or go for a walk in nature and we're going to have a good chat? How can I be more of a friend to people in my network today? Because I think by reaching out and supporting others, it comes back to ourselves, Dermot, in so many ways. And the other thing, of course, to always say is, two things. One, you know, developing a new interest, a new hobby. It's never too late to start something new, whether it's taking up yoga or taking up mindfulness or taking up gardening, joining a new class, following your interests, align with your
passions. Maybe rekindling something you did. I mean, people listening just might go, look, I'm sick of people recommending yoga to me. I'm never going to go. But maybe they did play the guitar, or maybe they sang in a choir, or maybe they used to play five-a-side football.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think these things are natural de-stressors that we didn't realize were doing such an important job until they disappear and they leave that vacuum.
You're dead right. Anything you can do that you enjoy, that you do in a group, could be incredibly good for you. I think it's one of the benefits of people that really enjoy the sea swimming. And I have lots of patients who sing in choirs and they absolutely love it. And of course, if you are struggling from persistent loneliness, Dermot, go to your doctor or go to a trained therapist, because don't struggle alone. There's always somebody there to help and support. Mm.
What about vitamin P, as you call it?
Yeah, I mean, vitamin P is what I call vitamin pet. And, you know, oxytocin is one of these miracle hormones that, you know, it heals damaged receptors on the surface of the heart from toxic stress. It calms us. It reduces feelings of anxiety. It builds empathy and connection and compassion and feelings of inner well-being. And of course, we release oxytocin when we care for somebody else. And it's one of the great benefits of giving somebody a hug. It's a great benefit of caring for a pet, even caring for a plant, you know. But, you know, having something else to do that involves somebody else.
You've obviously never seen my plants. It's like, I don't know, the vegetation equivalent of The Walking Dead or something. Every time I come in, I look out and they're all like, help us, help us. We're dehydrated and we're lonely. I pay no attention to my poor plants. But, you know, the pet thing is so true. We have a dog called Buddy. He's 5. And he's a mongrel. He's all types of different dogs. But I refer to him as our emotional polyfiller, that he just fills in those holes that you may have, you know. And it's very interesting to watch, particularly my children. And I certainly know I do it, that if you're having a challenging day, people's natural reaction is to really lie down and get close to the dog, you know, almost go face to face. And, you know, we say, we're stealing his goodness. We're stealing his goodness, because it feels like you're getting that polyfiller, that extra something to fill in the holes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, releasing oxytocin, it's really a byproduct of kindness, of caring for someone else. And it moves us away from, I suppose, the busyness of our minds, of stress and distraction. And it moves us back into that heart-centered space of being, which is really where we're truly meant to spend more and more of our time. And that's a place of non-judgment, a place where we can care unconditionally for others and be ourselves in the world.
Mm. Nicely put. Before you go, how challenging do you find it as a GP? I know that you don't necessarily see patients every day of the week now. You've got other things going on. But how challenging is it knowing someone comes to you and you think, oh, they're saying, oh, my knee is sore. But you know there's deeper issues. You know they need someone to listen to them for a little while. But you're conscious there's a whole plethora of other patients out in the waiting room who also need to get into you. How do you do that? How do you deal with that? Give people the time, but not, you know, you still have a business to run. You still have patients to see.
Well, I honestly believe, Dermot, that, you know, the greatest compliment any patient can ever give me after they've been with me is to say thank you for listening. Because I think in a world that is so busy and so sometimes so harsh now, to actually listen to somebody else and be actually invaluable. And literally, it doesn't take that long to listen unconditionally to somebody. And if you do that, people will more often than not tell you, you know, what they're worried about and how you can help. And sometimes listening is its own therapy for somebody else to feel valued and respected and understood.
Mm.
Of course, for GPs in general, it's not easy. There are pressures on the healthcare system. I'm not even going to start with that. But for me personally, in my own work, I control my own time and I understand that I'm responsible for how I schedule my own day. So I do try and make sure that people do have some time to discuss what really matters to them.
Yeah, well, it's so important, as you say, listening. Sometimes it feels like a dying art. We're all desperate to get our opinions out there and we're very slow to listen to others, as we see with everything that's going on these days. So thank you for reinforcing that for your patients and everybody listening today. Dr. Mark Rowe, family doctor, author of The Vitality Mark, number one best-selling author. And also check out Mark's podcast, In the Doctor's Chair. I know you have another book on the way very soon, Mark. So we're looking forward to that too. Thanks for chatting to us on the Anton Savage Show this morning on News Talk.
My pleasure, Dermot. Thank you so much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.